Boat Radio is brought to you by Boonridge.com, the home of adventure.
To the Sundowner, and today I'm joined by Chris Lorenzo from Seafarer. Welcome, Chris.
Nice to be here.
And we are in Chris's office, which is only just down the road from my pub in Highgate. We're down in Tottenham and just looking around at all the different places they sail to. So, Chris, the reason that I'm here today is I've sailed with you, and for people that have never tried a sailing holiday before, I just can't recommend it enough. So what I'd really like to begin with is, where's your favourite place to sail?
Well, being of Greek origin, obviously it would be the Greek islands. I speak the language and it helps, and it means I can sort of get the max out of the destination. But actually, the Dodecanese in the Greek islands, it's my favourite place to sail. It's just off the Turkish coast. It offers amazing contrast between cosmopolitan places and places that really are the back of beyond. Good sailing as well, which obviously is important to us sailors. You're sure of a decent wind. All in all, it's a perfect combination.
And if you were to imagine having your perfect sundowner, the sundowner being the drink you have at the end of the day when you've finished a hard passage, where would that be?
Well, sailing is all about discovering these little tucked away places that you can call your own, perhaps where there's nobody else or very few other people. So it's all about finding a lovely little bay, crystal clear waters, and drop anchor, watch the sun go down, and that's the time whilst we're debating what we're going to rustle up for dinner.
And for while you're thinking, contemplating what your dinner's going to be, and if you're down in the Dodecanese, I imagine it's probably going to be fish. What would be the ideal sundowner for you?
Well, since we're talking about pre-dinner and in the Greek islands, it would be it would have to be something around ouzo.
Ouzo, okay. So ouzo is an aniseed-flavoured spirit. The first recordings of ouzo is about the 14th century. As most good spirits, it's come from the monasteries as well, and it was originally very much for medicinal purposes. So we've got some here, and it's normally served two different ways, isn't it? If you're having it neat, it's a bit just a shot of ouzo. You see it at the coffee shops as well, round at the harbours. You've got the two fellas sitting there chatting about their day. If it's in France, they've normally got a gitane hanging out their mouth as well. So I've got in front of me here a lovely shot of ouzo, and we could have that neat. Or the other way to have it is actually with some ice. So I'm going to pour the ouzo into a glass, and I've got some chilled water as well. And the reason that we add the water is that it releases the flavours of the drink, and there's many different flavours that go in there. And as I add the water, you can see it going a slightly cloudy colour. Now, we get the cloudy colour from the oils that's actually suspended in the alcohol, and as soon as we add water, that's released, and it affects the way that light goes through. So I'm sure you recognise the flavours there. So when they're making ouzo, they start off with a neat spirit, and then they add the flavours by distilling it through it to lower and lower the alcohol content. How's that? Is that starting to remind you of your...
It certainly does, very refreshing. And in fact, the normal way to drink it in Greece amongst the locals is with a bit of water. Chilled water, it's a lot more refreshing that way. You sometimes see them adding lemonade instead. But yeah, this is a way, with a bit of water, it's perfect, very refreshing, and a great aperitif.
So moving on from there, and different ways of manipulating ouzo. My rule has always been is trying to drink locally wherever I go. And my last trip to Greece was certainly around ouzo and retsina. There are other ways to drink it. it's not used as a base ingredient on that many cocktails. It's normally used as a modifier. So a modifier is a normally an alcoholic spirit that's added to a base. So in terms of a modifier for ouzo, you quite often get it mixed with whiskey. So whiskey and ouzo being added together, and then a final ingredient on top. But where we do see it being very, very popular is around France, where they're adding flavoured syrups. So we're going to start off doing just that. We're going to take a glass. I'm going to take a shot of ouzo. It's going to be 25 mil. Now, the way you traditionally see this served is with the spirit, a little bit of syrup being added, which is about 10 mil, so not even about a quarter. And then from there, the water is added to make the flavor, the strength desired. So I'm going to just from that add about, it's about 75 mil of water. And to that, to finish it off, I'm just going to add some ice. It's up to you if you have ice or not, but it will just help bring the drink to the right temperature. So keep it at the right temperature. The water itself is actually chilled. And there you go. There's no garnish being added to this. If you'd like to try that, Chris.
Mmm.
Now, the aniseed flavours are very surprising, aren't they?
They are.
And it's amazing how flexible it is and how many different things you can actually use. Apple juice in there, mm-hmm. if you want to, if you've got that in the fridge as well. And we'll do just one more of those as well. And the next one we're going to use is actually for grenadine. So I'm going to start off with the ouzo again. It's just in a highball glass. A highball glass is a tall glass. If you go to a pub or restaurant, you'd normally get a Coca-Cola or something like that. It's normally a tall, thin glass. So again, we're just going with the ouzo. Adding the grenadine. Now, grenadine is made from pomegranate originally, and the name grenadine comes from the French for grenade. But unfortunately, nowadays, there's a lot of places that don't actually put any pomegranate in it. So you can actually get the concentrate juice and go from there. So I'm now adding the water. The beautiful thing is, it's just such a lovely... it's not just the texture of the drink as well, but it's the perfume. It's more of a perfumed finish on these drinks rather than something that's strongly alcoholic.
At this rate, I'm going to be Greek dancing the table for long, but a taste of this one. Very aromatic, actually. Very nice.
So the one based on mint in France, it's called a paraquet. But as we're using ouzo, I think the Greek for parrot is papagallos. Is that
correct,
right?
Correct, yes.
And the one with grenadine with the red colour to it, it'd be called a tomate. And is that tomata?
It is. Well, very good. Very
Greeks, still not too bad. What I have done is just to do some other shots here of different syrups. There's so many syrups available that you can get because coffee being so popular. So a lot of these you can just buy in the local supermarket. This is one that's got vanilla in it. And any nut sauce can go in there if you try that. So it's just one of those drinks that you don't realise how flexible it's going to be. This is cinnamon.
I'm not downing all these.
Take a little sip just to get the idea. And it suddenly makes you realise if you've got a bottle of ouzo in your drinks cabinet, that will not so good for you.
I'm a fan of cinnamon, actually, and I think that goes rather well.
And the final one to try is hazelnut.
Yeah, I'd say that's my least favourite of all of them, but still interesting.
Very diplomatic of you. And out of those, all of those, is there any particular one that you would...
I think, apart from the fact that it's nice and colourful, the grenadine version I thought was great, and I do like the cinnamon version as well.
Okay. So we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be looking at two additional cocktails that we're going to look at, as well as find out a bit more about seafare and sailing.
Bonnie Lass Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonnie Lass is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ring netter in Scotland, and now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, there's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonnie Lass Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnielasscharters.com.
Hi, this is Bob Bitchin from Cruising Outpost Magazine. Hear all about my amazing life here on Boat Radio.
So welcome back to The Sundowner. I'm with Chris from Seafarer, and we are talking about ouzo and different ouzo cocktails. Chris has got a fantastic business, Seafarer, where they've got bare boats as well as flotilla holidays. The first thing I want to ask you, Chris, is how did Seafarer come about?
Well, I'd been working in mainstream travel for some of the bigger tour operators for some years, and it's a highly competitive, almost a cutthroat business, I'd say, and which had its ups and downs. And at some point, my wife and I decided that we'd like to try working for ourselves and try in a niche that we ourselves loved. So it's a bit of living the dream, you could say, although we ended up not saving ourselves anything like as much as people think we should, or we it was just circumstances that drove us that way, but we stuck with it and here we are.
Okay, and tell me a bit about the journey, because you've got how many different bases do you sail out of at the moment?
Well, as far as flotilla is concerned, we have actually, although we're by no means the largest company out there, if anything, we're a small family-run company still, but we have the broadest range of flotilla destinations. So we have 8 different destinations across several countries. Greece is our main destination. We've got 4 flotilla bases there. We've got 2 in Croatia. We have Turkey, this year we were doing Palma, and our latest addition is the south of France, the Côte d'Azur on the south of France.
I saw that online and I looked at that and my mouth was watering, but this year, for our next holiday, I think that we're going to be going to Greece again. I will mention that I went there to Greece out of Lefkas Base with you in 2009 with the skipper of Boat Radio, Mike McDowell. And even though we had many adventures, I'm not going to bore you all with all of those, but what I will mention is some of the things that we did see on there. Now, our boat was anchored in a lagoon where the massive sea turtle pop up right next to us on our boat. It stopped us going in the water just in case it decided to have a nip at something. But the only sea turtle I'd seen before that was either on a menu in France in the 1990s or in China in the odd fish market in there. So it's nice to see one of those. We saw a snake swim across the lagoon with its head sticking out of the water as well. Still got no idea what kind of snake that was, but I'm glad I wasn't in the water with us. And also we saw a meteor traverse the length of the lagoon. It was lower than the side of the mountain, so you could get a judgment of the distance, and it was just an amazing thing to see. And that was all just in one day. And I think one of the key things about sailing holidays is something always happens.
Very true. Yes, absolutely.
So what kind of adventures have you had? Why don't I start making another drink? I'm going to start making an ouzini, which is ouzo, orange juice, and just some bitters. I'm going to use the cocktail shaker for that. So what's some of your favourite memories of sailing, Chris?
Well, in the early days of flotilla, I decided to grab one of the boats and join the flotilla, see what the crew were up to. And it was a great week down in the Saronic Gulf. And I remember sailing back into the base, the island of Poros. And as you're approaching Poros from the south, before you get to the strait between the island and the mainland, which is very narrow, almost like a river estuary, as you're approaching there are some offshore islands, and it's quite a popular anchorage there, some little islets. And I was coming in and some of the other boats from the flotilla were coming in. And I saw a chap who was heading straight for what I knew was a sandbar, which ran between the little islet, offshore islet and the mainland shore. And it was very deceptive because there were boats anchored on the other side. And whenever you see boats anchored, you kind of assume that that's safe water and that there's enough water there to get through. But these boats were actually anchored, taking shelter behind the sandbar. So I realised that he was heading straight for trouble. And so I radioed him straight away, hoping I could get his attention. Thankfully, I did. He instantly did a 360 and, sorry, a 180. Be heading back from there again, but a 180 and maybe he did a 360 while he was trying to do a 180, but he turned around and escaped. The next thing I noticed was the entire fleet, the rest of the people, had all been following him. So we were talking about it at the farewell dinner that night, but we were joking about the headlines next day about Seafarer Managing Director sees his entire fleet wrecked on his Thankfully, I was there to save the day. It had been mentioned in the morning briefing, but were they paying attention? Of course they were.
I think I've been caught out like that before, actually, on the holiday that I mentioned before. It's just it's amazing how you can turn from hero to zero very, very quickly within sailing. We were warned at the meeting before we went out about katabatic winds that normally hit you about 2 o'clock. That was the bit that I must have switched off for. And caught out, nearly not a full sail up from the boat just as we were coming out of the harbour as well, which is, challenging, but we survived. So what we have here, for the Uzini, I've just put 25 ml of ouzo into my cocktail shaker, about 75 ml of orange juice. I'm just going to give that a shake for 30 seconds. We're going to cut some of that out, otherwise you're just going to hear that while I'm doing it. One of the reasons for the cocktail shaker being used, you can get things down to about -3 degrees in about 15 seconds. And getting the chill there is wonderful. Also, oxidising the drink as well changes the flavour greatly. I mean, you think about wines where you allow them to breathe. It's a slightly different version of that. I'm just going to add a slice of orange to the drink as well, just to finish. And so I should have added some bitters as well. So just a couple of drops of bitters, give that a stir. This has just been poured over ice as well into a highball glass. You can hear that being mixed, and it's ready to go. So there you go, one Uzini.
You'll be amazed that I'm not slurring by this stage in the proceedings. Lovely. Just what you need on a hot summer's afternoon.
Yeah, lovely, great. Yeah, it's, we do have a spittoon here, but Chris has opted not to use it today. So the next drink I'm going to do is called a River Breeze, which is ouzo, orange juice and ginger ale. So ouzo being the base spirit. While I'm putting that together, tell me a bit about your sailing background. Where did the love of sailing come from?
Well, I think it was partly passed down in the family. My father, who was of Greek origin, was a sea scout master pre-Second World War in Greece. And interestingly, they used to sail a 10-metre sloop when he was an 18-year-old sea scout master with no engine. It had been donated to the troop. It had an engine once, but it didn't when it was donated. And obviously, in those days, it wasn't an easy thing to afford to replace it. So off they'd go, sailing in the Sirite Gulf in Greece and out into the Cycladic Islands even, with no engine. And with health and safety regulations being they are what today, you'd wonder how something like that would go down with the Sea Scouts. But Dad was a keen sailor, and we didn't get to sail that much in the UK. I learned to sail on the Welsh Harp, which those of you that know North London will no doubt have heard of or may have even sailed there. But then it was mostly Greek islands at every opportunity after that. And it was this love of sailing which led us to choose the sailing industry when we eventually decided to start our own business.
I'm sure there's many people listening to you with green ears, being with Boat Radio. Almost everyone that listens has got an interest in boats. So here we've got is the River Breeze. We've got orange juice, ouzo, so it's 45 mil of ouzo. Sorry, I went a bit under, it's 30, so I'll just add to that. 60 mil of orange juice, and we're just going to finish that off with some ginger ale. I'm serving this in a balloon glass, which is the large copper glass. And I'm going to garnish this with a slice of orange as well. Now, the nice thing I think about it is that the ginger and the aniseed taste actually work very well together. One doesn't overpour the other. So I'll pass that over to you, Chris.
The rest of the team out there must be very jealous at this stage.
Well, I think that's what Friday afternoon's about.
That's great. That is really good.
It's refreshing, isn't it?
It's really refreshing. That combination is quite special, actually, with the ginger ale.
Okay. So how has the industry changed in the last 12... Well, you were involved with Sunsail before you started your own business. So you've been really in this trade for, what, 25 years. How have you seen it change?
I'd say that clients are getting much more demanding. Initially, you'd see a lot of very small boats sort of 23, 27 footers would be very popular and very common. These days, even 40 footers are perceived by some as being too small and they're looking to go bigger and bigger. We're seeing a big increase in demand for catamarans. And I'd say that's largely because of the space and comfort. They're quick as well, of course, particularly downwind, but the space and comfort and the whole idea of being in a bay somewhere where you've got a sort of inside-outside space that's continuous. It's very spacious. It's all very convenient in terms of preparing drinks and snacks and having a dip and so on. So catamarans, very, very familiar, very popular. I'd say that there's been a bit of a shift back to flotilla sailing, which is good news for us because it's probably the single most important part of what we do. And I think there's a perception out there, or there used to be a perception, that flotilla was for beginners and for people who really could sail. Why go on a flotilla? That was for people who didn't really know what they were doing. The reality is that there's a lot more to sailing and to enjoying a destination than knowing how to trim your sails and park the boat. And local knowledge counts for a lot. And knowing the really good places to go and the places to avoid can really make the difference on a holiday. And that's where flotilla lead crews come in. It's also great to have somebody to come and pick up the pieces when you do something silly or something happens which you can't avoid. You can foul your anchor on a rock. Or whatever, and it could be really hard work to get out of that. And if you can call the lead crew to come and rescue you, it just means that you can still relax and be in holiday mode, and they take some of the strain. People like the company as well. It's nice to meet other like-minded sailors, and if you're a family with children, your children really like the idea of meeting other like-minded kids, and it takes some of the boredom of, you know, being stuck with mum and dad on a boat away, and it adds a sense of adventure for them. So flotilla, I think, is making a bit of a comeback because of all those strengths.
To reflect on that, the way I would state it is that if you went on a walking holiday in an area you didn't know, you'd much rather do it with a guide than you would actually on your own. Because if you just look at a route, you're not going to be able to spot all the good places to go to. And I've picked that up on so many different excursions where you've been to, where you just found a cove or an island or something that you just wouldn't see without their help.
Absolutely right. And even with the internet, in fact, it's the case that a lot of what you read is already out of date very quickly. Things change. So it's good to have the sort of really up-to-date information from people who really know all the local tips and secrets.
I've got to say that the itineraries that you have on your website are absolutely fantastic. So yeah, well done to you and a lot of research there. Okay, when we come back shortly, we'll be looking at our final cocktail, which is, some would call it a milky mojito. So we'll see you in a bit.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they are also the most resourceful, responsive and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.
My name is Matt Rutherford. I am the only person in history to have circumnavigated the Americas nonstop. I've sailed alone across the Atlantic twice. I've crossed the Pacific, I've sailed through the Bering Sea and around Cape Horn. I understand the challenges you will face trying to accomplish your blue water dreams, and I know how important it is to have the right boat. Whether buying a blue water boat or selling your blue water boat, Rogue Wave Yacht Sales has the experience to make that happen. Email me at matt@roguewaveyachtsales.com.
This is the Sundowner. This is Tom Helliwell from the Woodman, and I'm sitting with Chris from Seafarer Holidays, and we're talking about sailing and we're talking about Ouzo. Earlier on, we tried the Ouzini and then a River Breeze, which was finished with some ginger ale. We're now going to move on to a Milky Mojito. Now, a Milky Mojito is actually a julep. So we've got Ouzo, we've got mint leaves, and we've got honey we're going to use as Chris's preference as the sweetener for the drink. And then we're going to top it up from soda water. If someone wanted to get into sailing, what would be the best way to do that, Chris?
Well, I think a sailing course is the recommended way, and it's always good to start by being taught by an expert, and you don't sort of pick up bad habits and do things the wrong way. Interestingly, and great news for us at Seafarer, of course, is that the RYA, which is the governing body here in the UK, the Royal Yachting Association, has just changed the rules this year, and there is no longer a distinction when one is doing training between tidal and non-tidal waters.
That's wonderful news.
So your qualification is just as good if you learn to sail in the sunshine, where the water temperature is more like 25, 26 degrees, than learning to sail on a rainy, blustery day in the Solent, where the water temperature is more like 11 degrees.
Which is exactly what I did.
And many people have actually had that introduction to sailing, and it's put them off, because when it's cold, it's not always that pleasant, particularly if you haven't got the right gear. Beginners don't have the right gear, so the Mediterranean, I think, is the way to go if you're starting, and going with a recognised sailing school. There are a lot of British regulated, RYA regulated sailing schools. We at Seafarer have got one in the Ionian in Greece and another in Šibenik in Croatia. And one can either join a shared tuition boat where you book by the cabin, or for those that perhaps want to go as a family and learn, you can charter a boat with an instructor exclusively for you. And that means that it's more private and you get more personal attention. It can cost a little bit more depending on how many people are on board, but some people prefer to do it that way.
I saw as well that you do, one of the challenges I've had is keeping up with everything. There are other courses that you do as well, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, we actually cover the full spectrum. You can learn dinghy sailing, power boating. You can do the classic route of competent crew followed by day skipper, which is what most people do who are coming to yachting. And you can then progress and do coastal skipper. You can even do all the preparation for a yacht master qualification. These days, the theory can easily be done online, and that way you can do that with a bit of assistance when you need it available, either on the phone or online. You can do that at your own pace, whether it's in the evenings or weekends, whenever you can fit it in, which means it's less of a mission to sort of find time off to go and do the theory courses. And it is very important, of course, to do the theory before you embark on any of the practical stuff.
One of the great things that they do now is, which is different from when I did my qualifications, is that you have to do your radio licence now. And without that, you're not allowed to take the boat out.
Yeah, it is very important, being able to use the radio correctly. It can be very, very important. It can be a life and death situation. And some countries, of course, in the Mediterranean now insist on a radio licence before they let you charter. Whilst here in the UK, we're very relaxed about these sort of things. And if you're taking a boat privately, you don't need any qualification. It's surprising, but it's the case here in the UK still that you can just take a boat and go, even if you've never been on one before, and it's entirely legal to do so. But in the Mediterranean, it isn't, which is another of the reasons that we recommend if you want a holiday in the Med, you need to get qualified.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the drink that we've done, a milky mojito or an ouzo julep. What I have done is I've muddled some mint just for a very short time with some lime juice and some honey. If you over-muddle the mint, it becomes bitter. So we only work that for a very, very short length of time. We then poured on the ice. We poured over the ouzo. And I've just put a sprig of mint on top of it. It's all in a highball glass, a nice tall glass. And a sprig of mint to finish on top. So there you go, Chris.
I think this is the last one I could handle before...
You meant to say slow very much. Oh, there you go. Sorry.
Lovely.
Just missed the limes to garnish as well.
Superb.
Okay. That's all on our little journey with ouzo. So thank you very much, Chris, from Seafarer. It's been wonderful speaking to you and hearing a bit more about Seafarer. And I'll be booking my holiday up shortly. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us today.
Cheers.
Skippersreview.com, where boaters know best and businesses pass the test.